can I drill down on what you're trying to get at here a little bit? Because I'm not entirely clear. It kind of seems like there are two issues. One is a therapeutic issue from the point of view of the patient, that there's essentially a biomarker to predict a treatment that's got a 60% response rate that they would want to know about. But then the implications to the family. And isn't there a way that you can divide that up a little bit? In other words, I would assume there may be situations where family or patients don't want to know from a counseling perspective, but clearly they would want to know from a treatment perspective.
Yeah, and so that may be the case, I think.
I mean, is that what you're trying to get at with the disruptive?
No, what I'm trying to get at is that all of genetics has been set up that, you know, this is personal utility information, right? I mean, the whole model that we start with has this idea that when we first began testing that the information was just for people to know for personal reasons, not necessarily for medical reasons. And that model has obviously changed over the last 20 years. And this is kind of now the peak of that, right? Now it's, as you said, a therapeutic biomarker. So we have to readapt our model so that people get this information. But also we can't neglect the implications for the family. And we have to make sure that that information gets out to the family because, yeah, they're all focused on therapy and that's totally appropriate. But on the other hand, if their daughter now is at risk for developing a bad disease, they also need to know about that.
So are you saying that you think maybe in clinical practice there are people who are getting BRCA tested, they're found to be BRCA positive, and they're not getting genetic counseling?
I don't know that to be the case, but my concern is a little bit of what you kind of alluded to earlier, is that when people are getting this for therapy in the middle of, you know, obviously the devastation of having metastatic disease, if they deprioritize the implications for the family, then their family members might not get the information in the way they need to. If the patient's sick, busy dealing with being sick, it's like, yeah, okay, later on I'll tell my family, but they need to know this. So I'm just worried about how we're going to set up the model. Worried is not fair. I think we have to think about how we're going to set up the model to make sure that the people don't fall through the cracks.
I'm going to say telemedicine, teleoncology could probably help a lot, but just my thought about that. I've got to tell you about a great case that we had at ASCO in our GI symposium. These were cases from practice. So we had a general medical oncologist from Pennsylvania, gets this patient, comes in, 60s, who's got metastatic pancreatic cancer. So he actually gives us this detailed pedigree that he wrote up, and his patient's got all these cases of cancer in the family. So he sends off, and the patient's got a BRCA germline mutation. And, of course, the patient's got metastatic pancreatic cancer. He's going downhill. The patient has a 35-year-old niece who is BRCA positive, is now being considered for prophylactic surgery. And just the, you know, the astuteness of this oncologist, because this patient got pancreatic cancer, perhaps the life of this woman was saved. I mean, it's an amazing case.
Yeah, no, and I think we're seeing more and more of that. I think there's more and more understanding that these germline mutations and, you know, BRCA1, BRCA2, Lynch mutations, and certainly others are being found in people who would not have been tested based upon existing criteria. And how we work that into our model is going to be very interesting.
Incidentally, the last two prostate cancer symposia that we've done, one was AUA, the other was at GU symposium, I asked the faculty, do you do BRCA testing on your patients with metastatic castrate-resistant prostate cancer? And Howard Scheer was one of them. Every single one of them is doing it, and every single one of them is using a PARP inhibitor if they're positive, and almost all of them have cases of patients who responded. Which really leads into my question. You mentioned the MSI thing, which is really, I think, the first approval that was kind of based on a biomarker and not on a tissue type. Do you think that's where we're heading with BRCA and PARP inhibitors? You know, again, you're seeing people use it in prostate cancer.
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I think that that is going to be a complicated regulatory science issue. And how to get the FDA on board with that, I don't know who would take point on that, but it makes sense. We're seeing responses to PARP inhibitors in individuals with germline BRCA mutations in many different settings, and you hear anecdotal ones in even more. So it would be logical for this to be a pathway-driven type of approval. But how you set up the designs that the FDA approves that is not clear to me.